Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And your campaign begins today. And believe it or not, I have another and. And in our appeals to heaven, we need to try to be a little bit more sincere, be more, I guess the best word I'm trying to look at or trying to present here is that we need to be specific. I mean, it's nice to say, you know, bless somebody, but if they're sick, then, you know, we want to bless them that they overcome their ailments, or we, if they're facing a trial, give them the strength. So let's start specifically asking that all, you know, that let's just say it this way, because help me out on this, because I want to get this right, because I believe in the power of prayer, and a good effective prayer actually addresses these things. So one of the things that we need, and you can agree or disagree, we got Tammy with us. Welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you.
And so I believe that we need to include in our prayer the call for the Lord to inspire everyone to take a stand, that we all need to get engaged in the government that he gave us to basically man ourselves. This is a self-governing system that for us to succeed, we have to be involved. So we have to, I believe, one of the things that you need to include in your appeal to heaven is a call that, you know, all are inspired, that maybe he may bless or touch the hearts and minds of all American citizens, that they get involved in preserving this Constitution. That's what we're supposed to be doing anyway. That's the way it's designed. Right, so I think that would be one thing that we would ask for. And maybe frustrate those who are working against us. You know, actually call upon a frustration. And I think that we also need to look at to give us faith and strength, you know, and increasing our faith and strength as, you know, as we continue in this plight for our liberty. But I think we need to be very specific and, you know, ask for, you know, actually one of the things that I think it does, I think we need to include maybe some forgiveness because of our failures. We have failed. You know, the blood is on our hands, folks. You can't just say Obama did it. You know, we let all of these things happen. Our forefathers, you inherited this system from literally the framers and, you know, their progeny, their children, their, you know, which is us, we're just way down the food chain or the, you know, the generations. But we, over time, it has been our families and all of those citizens who've allowed these things to happen because we didn't care to get involved. And now it is for us and this generation, if this nation is to be saved, it must be on our shoulders and our heads. And, you know, and then we actually have to call, I think it's important that we have such a conviction in this call that we actually say, you know, may I suffer if I fall short, something like that. Anyway. But I'm sure
I would say also to ask specifically that we begin to identify and understand exactly what the enumerated powers were so that we can call them out for it.
Yes. Yes. Give us the knowledge we need to do what we need to do. Yes. See, there's all sorts of really good things that we, and I know that people are actually engaged in those types of prayers, but we need to increase that number. We need to appeal to heaven. So,
I honestly believe that if people myself included, if we truly understood exactly what those very specific enumerated powers were and how they're overstepping those, I think more people would start to stand up.
Yep. Well, I think so. And, you know, we've been deliberately misled. But the question is, did we allow ourselves to be misled? As a matter of fact, I think it's this way. I think that, you know, we
unknowingly allowed ourselves to be misled.
Yeah. OK, so let's just say let me try this. It is a failure, or it is a propensity for people to be lazy or to try to seek a less effort or less costly way of doing things. And so when it came down to our education, we left it to others, and it seemed like they were doing a decent job. And over time, things started sliding and sliding. And there's no doubt in my mind, folks, when we look at what they're, you know, how we're standing up against the type of crap that they're driving into our school today, why is it so hard for us to stop it? Because we enabled and empowered them over a long train of, you know, we didn't see this coming. And yeah, okay, they're creating the, and they started passing new laws, and we didn't see this coming, to where we literally lost our voice with our education system. And as I understand it, Obama was the one that actually did that. As far as, you know, creating that final blow of control over education. So, you know, I don't think we deliberately invited the devil in the room, but when we, you know, leave the doors and the windows open, he's going to get in. And so anyway, we had to be vigilant. We have to ensure. And I think that using the power of prayer and that appeal is something necessary. Now, here's an interesting thing. Why don't you approach your way leader? Why don't you approach your minister, your priest, your spiritual leaders, to actually, you know, stand up and invite this type of prayer and actually call upon, you know, the parishioners of your community to, you know, get involved in, you know, seeking forgiveness and for the strength to do what we need to do. This does not require, folks, just be praying that we don't have to fight a revolution. You can actually thank him for the system he gave us, because we don't have to pick up arms to get our government back. Thank him for that. Most people don't even realize that. We have everything. He gave us everything we needed in this Constitution. Now, when we go back and we look at our forefathers, we're going to be covering some content today. Isn't this a perfect segue? We're going to be covering some content today where a dark cloud was lowered on the District of Columbia that still sits there today. And that dark cloud was when the new fold, or the new progressive era, when Britain succeeded in taking us not militarily, but politically. They assumed a level of control over us politically. Now, how do you assume a lever, or I should say, how does one assume a level of political control? Well, if you have
money.
Yeah, by money, absolutely. As a matter of fact, when we look at, and I was going to talk about the message, because I did get your comment that it was, you know, good to go. And so I will be sending those out either tomorrow or this weekend and so forth. And you'll actually see the one going to the Wyoming legislature. So the point is that by money, and by a sleight of hand, and this U.S. Senate is a perfect example, we know, and I've proven, that the state legislatures have never lost their suffrage in the Senate. In other words, those senators are legally obligated to actually listen and follow their advice and consent from the state legislature that when they tell them you will vote against this treaty, they can actually stop it. Because when they tell their senator, if you will vote against it, and they find out that they actually denied or violated their suffrage, then they can pull them back. We need to have the governor attuned with this. This is why they need to create the law. Unfortunately, the Constitution's clear, but unfortunately, governors today are, you know, I'll just say milquetoast. Governors today have no backbone and no spine. And as a matter of fact, they cower to attorney generals and judges. And so in I know in Wyoming, this is very problematic. So Wyoming would need to create an emergency legislation that basically makes it a points out that if a U.S. senator, a Wyoming U.S. senator, fails to give the state of Wyoming their equal suffrage in the Senate, that means both of those senators are theirs to control or to advise and inquire and expect them to vote the way they tell them to. If they don't give them that suffrage as guaranteed in the Constitution in Article 5, then they will have committed a felony and a violation of their oath. And so the first thing, that they will be removed and then charged with whatever. And so they need to come up with what they want to do. And I know these legislators, they're smart enough to kind of create, you know, because they do it to us, all right? They're very good at pinning us and caging us in and so forth. But bottom line, the right to extradite them for actually violating the Constitution, but we want to make it a crime. So these guys have to serve time. That it be a felony for violating the, you know, the sacred thing called suffrage. How dare us? I mean, one of the things that we kind of went through over the past century and a half was the importance of suffrage. We granted suffrage to all races, kindreds, and tongues. I mean, actually, you're supposed to speak English, period. You have to speak English to vote, so I'm sorry. So all kindreds and types of people, cultures, and so forth. And we did it because gender was no longer a factor anymore, that all sex, both sexes could vote. And then we even went further and said, if you're 18 years old and capable at that age, because that was the age of joining the military, it slid down to 17 now, but at that point in time, it was 18 years of age, and they said, if you're old enough to go die for your country, you're old enough to vote. Now, I honestly think that the age of service should actually go up a little bit until we actually take back our education system to where kids at the age of 16, possibly, are educated properly to where they can actually, you know, go and start their career, just like their forefathers. I mean, Madison, I believe, got his degrees from Princeton. I think he was 17, 18, maybe 19. I mean, I know he wasn't 20. So I believe that once somebody is, you know, at that point where they're actually capable of providing for themselves, 17, 18, whatever that is. But, you know, it's hard to legislate things like that because then all of a sudden you create this loophole for people. Well, I'm not going to provide for myself. I'm going to live with my parents for the rest of my life. I mean, there's always these gamers that, you know, you go, ah. Anyway, that's frustrating. But my point is that Wyoming actually has the authority and the ability to do this. The problem is that the governor won't do it, and probably the attorney general won't do it, so you have to tie their hands by creating the law. And it's actually a law that is demanded by the Constitution. So it is basically a law that will enforce Section 3 as well as if – and so this is the thing. I want to make sure I add this because I think I said this before, but I didn't say it today. That if they will not resign and step down and they demand to stay in their abomination, that becomes the felony. So, in other words, when the state legislature says, hey, you just violated your, you know, your oath to supporting the Constitution, which means that you've actually violated Article 5 specifically, and Section 3 demands that you be removed, you've got to go. And if they fail to actually step down when that has been articulated by the state legislature, then, and they demand to stay in the Senate, you know, folks, I hope you understand that the words I am saying are shaking the foundation of the globalists. And I hope you realize the simplicity that a poor fool like myself is capable of figuring things like this out. It doesn't require this, you know, this brilliant mind. I believe anybody that becomes, you know, cognitively aware of the boundaries of the Constitution and what the Constitution says and so forth, if we become literate on this, we would all be agreeing and understanding, and these ideas would be coming from other people. But because we're so illiterate and nobody's taking the time, I mean, I can't tell you, I spend time working with other show hosts and so forth to help, because they want their audience to get involved. I mean, these people, the cry, it, you know, does not go unanswered. When somebody comes to me and says, hey, can you help? We will do, I will do everything I can to help.
Let me ask you this question.
Go ahead.
When you say that they, the U.S. Senate, needs to vote, they need to vote in accordance with what they tell, how they tell them to vote. Yep. How does that happen? They, as in, does the state Senate need to pay attention to all of the bills coming through in the federal side? So, and need, do they need to vote on all of those and then tell them how they voted?
Yes. Okay. So surprise, surprise, we woke up and we live in the 21st century on our way into the 22nd. And surprise, surprise, as we acknowledge the fact that we have real-time governance, we have real-time suffrage, there's no reason why the state legislature can't have real-time suffrage. And so there's also no reason why the state legislature doesn't create its own a standing, permanent standing committee. And in other words, this committee must be informed and working, you know, as long as Congress is in session, the Senate is in session, when they're capable of casting votes, that the state legislature, that this committee will actually be formed so that they can actually control and make sure that their senators do not have any questions of how to behave with the treaties and the points that they have to face. Does that make sense?
I think so.
And so this committee would be charged by a chair, and that chair should probably be, or a chair, vice chair should probably be the president of the Senate and the Speaker of the House. Because technically they're the leadership of the legislature, and that the legislature, if they feel, well, once they see the committee, so let's, we know when a treaty's coming and a treaty's in negotiation, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't happen in a blink of an eye. You know, Trump sends his emissaries, or the president sends an emissary out. They're working on and pounding out this treaty. Now, instead of the federal government having, and they can't claim secrecy. They can't claim secrecy anymore. What they have to do is they have to include the state legislatures. This goes back to one of the old points I've talked about the importance of oversight of every federal thing that happens, whether that's classified or not. So Snowden, this really kills me how so many good patriots look at Snowden as a patriot, and he's not. Snowden actually killed people. He violated his obligation of protecting that classified information, right, wrong, or indifferent, even though it may be violated. If he had a moral compunction, he wouldn't have put this into the hands of the press and of our enemy so that it could be exploited. If he was an honest person that wanted to do the right thing, he would have walked into a state legislature like the state of Hawaii, where he was in, where he finally decided to go on the lam, walked into the state legislature and said, I need to see somebody of the Senate and the House right now. And, oh, okay, so they go off into a room, and he says, I've got classified information I need to share with you. And so, do you have the ability to have a classified room? No, of course they don't. Well, he's going to say, well, you have to know this, and so I have to make this decision to give this to you, because it's far better that they receive the information than the newspaper. It's far better that the states and the state, who are the parties to this compact, have the full knowledge of what the heck's going on. And then the obligation should be, and this should have been set up a long, long time ago, that if every state legislature had a classified SCIF, Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility, that's what SCIF stands for. If they had a SCIF where they could have secure, classified information pulled out, displayed, what have you, and the ability to communicate amongst the states, not with the federal government, amongst the states, so that they have a secure network so that all of the states could actually say, hey, do you realize that we're being spied on by this little creature we created? This goes beyond reproach. We have to act, right? And so had we actually created this, had the states actually been proactive in ensuring compliance and so forth, we would have actually been able to directly engage a long time ago, when as soon as we had almost real time, and I would say probably the 50s, was when we were getting close to the time where we could kind of know what was going on. And I believe that at that point in time, had the states been vigilant and over, you know, being the overwatchers of the federal government, well, I couldn't imagine what the world would be like today if the leaders of this nation and these states decided not to become corrupted and actually live the Constitution. I would see the United States would probably have somewhere over 100 states in it today. You know, where there'd be states in Europe and states in South America, Central America, maybe even Asia, Africa, that had joined the Union, because they could have, because this is what the plan, I believe, God wanted. He didn't want liberty to be contained on the earth. He wanted all people to be able to receive his gospel. And the best way to do that would be to basically proliferate a nation that guarantees liberty to all. So anyway, because we're 200 some odd years beyond this, once we had the Civil War, and actually once we did everything, if we would have done a lot of things right, I can't imagine how far this nation, this world would be. I mean, we wouldn't be listening to Satan, but because we're so blinded and because we're so conceited and because we, again, the really comes down to all of us, because we've never accepted our responsibility. So back to what we need to do. We need to actually form these SCIFs. We need to be able to have, because if the Senate is saying, oh, well, this treaty's classified, that's okay, we got a SCIF, send it to us, we'll take a look at it, and we'll tell you how to vote on it. It'd be that simple. And it would also be that simple if somebody, you know, in the intelligence community realizes that the federal government is doing something it shouldn't do, then it could be easily exposed to the states. The states could engage, and the whole world wouldn't know about it. You see?
Yes.
So as everybody applauds and looks at Snowden, he's a narcissist. And he's gotten his time of fame, and as far as I'm concerned, he should dangle at the end of a rope.
Well, that's a new perspective I've not heard.
Yes, because he committed treason. There are people he discussed. We'll be right back. So I will go over this, because I know that there's so many people that have the wrong paradigm regarding Snowden and his disclosure that we'll have to, you know, inform Tammy the things I've espoused and ranted on, and that's okay. We'll come back, and I will kind of lay this out again, and then we'll get into the Organic Act. I promise. I'm Jerry Mobley. We'll be right back. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I'm not surprised you've not heard that kind of paradigm, but there, you know, it just seems like the dialogue regarding what Snowden did and disclosing information that's classified in nature, because what happens when you disclose that information, it exposes sources and methods, and what that means that there may be names behind that. There may be operators that are being exposed. There has been many times where classified information has been exposed, and in so doing, that has resulted in the mass killing of spies that are out there doing good work outside of the United States. Because, you know, sometimes these sources may be the same or what have you, but it doesn't matter. The point is, why would anybody, you know, so let's back up. I believe that when a servant, the federal government, a general service institution, would behave if they knew they couldn't get away with anything, right?
Yeah.
Now, a child knows when they're in the room all by themselves and nobody's around and there's that cookie jar, the temptation's overwhelming. But if they knew that there was a camera that, you know, that was going to be monitored, that, you took a cookie when you shouldn't have. Whether they knew it by missing a cookie or the lid or what have you, it didn't matter. They knew they were going to be caught. Then the child would actually modify their behavior to actually do the right thing and wait, and either that or go ask mom, can I have a cookie, please? And no or yes, and then accept the outcome. So the states have this responsibility. We went through these five critical documents. They're supposed to oppose every infraction. It's their responsibility. Our state legislatures are supposed to be doing this. I mean, this may seem convoluted of, you know, how this all trickles down to us, but we need to understand this government so that we understand whose job is supposed to, you know, who's supposed to be doing what. Who holds the state in line? The county commissioners are supposed to be the supervisors. Your state, your county legislators are the ones that are supposed to hold your state in line, which is why we go to them. That is the pecking order of our government. And so even though everybody wants us to believe that there's nothing beyond the states, that the states rule us all, no, we don't have kings in these states. We have an organized governmental structure. This is why I say we have a hybrid constitutional republic. We don't have just one constitution. We have three, or we're supposed to have three, where we have representation at a minimum three. You could have four. Oh, boy, GR, you know, you're just confusing me. What's the fourth one? When you have such a metropolis like Los Angeles or New York or Chicago, when you've got these big bodies of people concentrated into one area, they still deserve good representation. So that county may be broken into almost like a state. to where the county legislative body will be bicameral, and they will have representations of all the different districts. You know, the district led, you'll have district legislative bodies, and then those districts, and the people will have representation in that county legislature. So at that point in time, you'll have a bicameral legislative body at the county. When we look at a government, our government should enfold not just representation, but representation of the sovereigns if there's a government underneath that government. In other words, when we look at the federal government, it's the people of the state and the state legislature who have suffrage in that Congress or in that legislative body. At the state level, it should be the people of the counties and the county legislatures that would have representation in the House and the Senate, just like the federal. And at the county level, if you live in a very rural area, then, you know, it's going to be a large county. If you live in a highly dense populated area, you may actually want to condense that into these counties. You cannot allow, I will just say a metropolis, you cannot allow a population center to become the most powerful government, because those things can actually start growing, as we see with New York. It basically sprawls across several counties. Atlanta is one of those states or one of those cities. I mean, I think Atlanta, it comprises of 20 counties. And so, but Atlanta controls everything. And now it's one thing to say, you know, okay, we may need to expand the county of Atlanta to where we have these districts. But then when we look at the representation, because this kind of makes things, I will just say, more apportioned properly. Because when you look at the county of the metropolis, it should actually grow to the metropolis itself. Why? Because Atlanta has way too much suffrage in the state Senate if they were going by county. You want to actually make sure that the county itself really comprises of that metropolis or grows and consumes with that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, it preserves the order of suffrage, maintaining equal suffrage in the state Senate for, you know, that legislative body of the Senate, so that democracy, you may have a democracy problem on the House, but that's the Senate that actually protects you. As we see today, we can see that there are three or four states that actually have a huge influence over the House of Representatives in Congress, because that's where the population is. But the right. Senate is the check on that. And so when you actually allow a population center to, you know, break the counties down and break the counties down, no, you don't allow that. What you have to do is you have to actually not break it into new counties. You actually have to consolidate counties and just have a legislative body at the county level that actually, and it should be the final level where you actually have district representation and people that have, you know, representation in the House and in the Senate at the county level. You've got to have bicameral legislation or a legislative body, because that is the process of protecting us from mob rule.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so back to Snowden. Snowden was a narcissist. As a matter of fact, anybody that does the research on this guy, he started keeping classified information long before he even realized that the federal government was violating the Constitution. Nobody looks at all the big picture. They just go, oh, he did us all this. And we clap and applaud. And actually, there's probably people, or he has basically exposed things that we've had advantages of in collecting information to where we no longer have access to control that. You don't do those things. Snowden violated this nation he was treasonous by what he did, by sharing that with the press and our enemies. Period. The guy's got to hang. And so what should have happened, and maybe this should be the Snowden rule, that the state legislatures step up and they say, we're creating our own SCIFs. That, as a matter of fact, this would be one of those things that I would believe would come forth in Republic Review. That, you know, how do we keep a check on this federal intelligence, you know, capability? We need to have it, because it does a great service for us. We need this, but we can't allow them to be playing China on us. This is how the states would do that. The states would basically create a system that would allow whistleblowers to come into the state. Because guess what? When we look at the collection agencies, whether it be in D.C. or anywhere in the United States, if it's outside the United States, then 9 times out of 10, it's not going to be something that the states would really be interested in, right? Unless they're actually spying on the United States from abroad. But, I mean, you know, the sources and all of that would already be divulged internal to the United States. Does that make sense? I mean, if they're using, mm-hmm. you know, far-reaching collection sites, you know, outside of the sphere of the earth, you know, so forth, because I can't say certain things, even though everybody knows about it, you can't use that word. And anyway, so the point is that, you know, these sources and methods would still be seen and known. And so there's a process. We should have a process that would allow the states to have visibility and say, you can't do this. We have a Fourth Amendment that says the people are to be secure in their persons. We have no right, nor do corporations have rights, on spying on these people and then making and sharing that information. Our Fourth Amendment right went out the window big time when they actually started redefining it for the internet and for corporations. This is why Windows, Google, Apple, they're all basically, and Amazon is now sharing this stuff with the government. And Amazon was one of the first ones to create this. Hey, we could do some really good things here for you, CIA.
Yeah.
Right. So there are methods, there are things that we could do that would preserve liberty and the rule of law and order. The only thing that I'm doing is I'm disrupting those things that the globalists have been hiding behind, exposing those things, and letting us take control again. Okay, so what we have is we have the Organic Act, and I have a couple of paragraphs highlighted, because I believe that once we go through that, we'll be able to really see how this violates the Constitution, because I'm going to read Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 16, I think, the exclusive legislation, and because I don't think we need to read all 11 pages. Folks, you're more than welcome to read this whole thing, and I will kind of encapsulate what you will find in the Organic Act, okay? So let's go ahead and just pick it up and read the very beginning and then Section 2. Just read those points, and you'll see the highlights on the column. That's just because it's a PDF. I couldn't not highlight that, but just, you know, read the text of the paragraphs there. Thank you so much.
Okay. Just starting in the beginning?
Yeah, chapter whatever. An act, let's just start off with the title. An act to provide a government for the District of Columbia. Go ahead.
It's not what it says on mine. It says 41st Congress.
Okay, so yeah, we're actually need to go down a few paragraphs to where you see approved February
27th,
1871. Okay. Okay, so it's about halfway down the page, a third down the page, somewhere there, right?
Okay.
Then you see this new chapter, and then it's this. So what we're looking at the end of each year, I think it's at the end of each year or the end of each session, Congress consolidates all of the acts that they passed. And so what we're seeing is a summation of the acts that were passed. we're not actually looking at the debates in the legislation, in the House and the Senate, as this act was being pounded out. We're just looking at the final act that was passed. So we're not even talking about the definitions and those things. You're more than welcome to go into this. What's important is, and the question we have to ask is, does the Constitution give Congress the power to do what they just did? Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Be it enacted by the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled, that all that part of the territory of the United States included within the limits of the District of Columbia be, and the same is hereby created into a government by the name of the District of Columbia, by which name it is hereby constituted a body corporate for municipal purposes, and may contract and be contracted with, sue and be sued, plead and be impleaded, have a seal and exercise all other powers of a municipal corporation not inconsistent with the Constitution and laws of the United States and the provisions of this act.
Now, Section 2.
Be it further enacted that the executive power and authority in and over said District of Columbia shall be vested in a governor who shall be appointed by the President, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, and who shall hold his office for 4 years and until his successor shall be appointed and qualified. The governor shall be a citizen of and shall have resided within said district 12 months before his appointment and have the qualifications of an elector. He may grant pardons and respites for offenses against the laws of said district enacted by the legislative assembly thereof. He shall commission all officers who shall be elected or appointed to office under the laws of the said district enacted as aforesaid, and shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed.
Okay, so we can go into the nuts and bolts, but as you can see, what is Congress doing? They're actually creating a state out of the District of Columbia. They're creating a governor, and they're going to create this whole infrastructure where this state is basically a child of the federal government. Now we see, as this child has grown and matured since 1871, that today they now have the privilege, because they amended the Constitution to do this because we were stupid, but we've been smart enough not to let this mature to a state. They've actually tried to make the District of Columbia a 51st state. We go through the ratification debates and help you understand that the District of Columbia cannot be a state, especially a state that is completely under the control of the District of Columbia. It is to maintain autonomy to where it doesn't have the ability to have any voice over the election of the president, any voice of representation in that body. If you live in D.C., you will not have any ability to have representation. You must live outside of D.C., where you will have a governor and a state choose a president and those things. D.C. must be autonomous, and it is not to have any voice in the government that it is. It is a government and a child created to serve the states and not trying to create and magnify itself to an equal stature of the states of the United States. This is why some of these amendments will actually be recognized when we do Republic Review as an abomination, and the two amendments that actually granted both the Electoral College and this quasi-representation in Congress, slowly but surely they're elevating this, and as generations pass, they will ultimately do this, where they now actually have their own state in the union. This was when they went through the ratification debates, they wanted to make sure that there would be no state that would actually be able to commingle with this seat of government. So, what does the Constitution say? You know, isn't that nice that we can actually look at what is supposed to happen? And in Article 1, Section 8, these are the powers granted to Congress, that Congress shall have the power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district. And then there's this parentheses, not to exceeding 10 miles square, close parentheses, as may by concession of particular states. In other words, this land didn't exist. This area of D.C. didn't exist. And the area of D.C. that was created, not to exceed 10 miles square. So if, and actually what happened, folks, let me just finish reading this, and then I'll get into this a little more historically. Okay. As may by secession of particular states. So in other words, two states or one state had to give up some land, and this was on the edge of the border of, and actually between the Potomac kind of goes in the middle of D.C., where a little piece of Maryland and a little piece of Virginia was granted the seat of government. And for some reason, they didn't know why. They just felt they needed to have this big area for the needful buildings of what they needed to do. Now, because in those days, they couldn't fathom virtual connections and so forth. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, as it goes, it says, so acceptance of Congress. So particular states and the acceptance of Congress, they make the seat of government. Therefore, this is what it says. And the acceptance, this is the actual power, okay, as made by secession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and needful buildings. In other words, they have exclusive legislative authority to kind of create the law and order necessary. Now, if D.C. has grown so much to a point to where, you know, they have all of these people, then what should happen, folks, is the District of Columbia should be wiped away. Because the Constitution, without the seat of government, actually grants the federal government the ability to possess forts, in other words, military installations within the United States, forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards for the Navy, so ports for the Navy, and needful buildings, other needful buildings. So when we look at D.C. today, the District of Columbia, then if the Pentagon obviously is a needed building for a role and function within the federal government, then the Pentagon becomes a needful building. They don't need the land. And as a matter of fact, the Pentagon sits where? It doesn't sit in the District of Columbia. Did you know that?
I did not.
It sits in Virginia. Virginia took its land back. So the needful buildings now, so now that they have this ability to have exclusive legislation so where they can be unfettered, now they, because does the federal government own its own power company?
No.
No. It requires the services from Maryland and or Virginia. Same thing with its own water purification. So the services, the sewage, all of those types of services, of municipal services, can come and should come from the state of Maryland or the state of Virginia. What they did was they went down a path that was truly a no-no in trying to aggrandize themselves and create a government. And in so doing, because this is not where the corporations were created. this is where this government went down or back behind, you know, these walls, or I should say curtains, under the, you know, the shroud of secrecy, and they started establishing these corporations for the District of Columbia, and then every little vestige, the Department of Transportation, the Treasury, they all became incorporated. As everything was now underneath this state of the District of Columbia, this unconstitutional state.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was they actually exercised power that they weren't granted. Congress has to be involved in anything and everything. If they're to be policed or what have you, if they need assistance for order. So, okay, what do they do about executing the laws of the union? If the laws of the union are being violated in the District of Columbia, or there's an insurrection in the District of Columbia, what does the Constitution tell them that they have the power to do? They have the power to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the union and suppress insurrections. So they already have a police force to actually take care of those things. It's in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is the federal government was really, really, really well contained. That Congress, the only thing that could happen is Congress had to do everything. The Congress had to do everything. They couldn't abdicate the responsibility without amending the Constitution to say, we will allow the District of Columbia to become its own state. That is something very specific that must be amended.
Right.
Okay. So I find this hopefully is very illuminating for people when they realize that when we look at the District of Columbia, what really needs to happen is every building that is actually federal, because there are all sorts of buildings that have been paid for by top dollar, by corporations, that actually needs to be transferred. Because you know what? They're not taxed. Those corporations functioning and operating in the District of Columbia may be taxed for the District of Columbia, but they actually should be taxed by the states. Because even though they have the income tax, they can tax the income tax, they basically bypass and protect all these corporations, Rand, Boeing, you know, Raytheon, all of these companies that actually have, you know, built some building. I think that part is in Virginia, but those that are still left up in Maryland, you know, all of those companies, corporations, and services that are, you know, selling stuff to the, you know, the congressmen, like food, pizza. If it's in D.C., the states are being robbed of the revenue that they should be generating, because those aren't needful buildings. And all we need to do is literally get rid of the District of Columbia and say, you will operate based on the needful buildings that you will have. Because now you have the ability to actually become far less of a target. Because the fact that D.C. sits in, you know, in all of our government and all of these things are literally in one spot, folks. It is a big target. All they need to do is wipe out D.C. and supposedly we will be crippled. I will share this with Tammy because we ran out of time. And so we will pick this up tomorrow. God willing. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.